Okay, we're going to go ahead and get started. Welcome, everybody. Thanks for being on the call. I'm Joel Smith. Welcome to the PMFA Best Practices Training Call. We do this every month on the fourth Monday of every month at 11 o'clock, and you all probably know that because you're logged in right now. So today, we're going to try to tackle the problem of what do I do? If I'm an owner and I'm struggling, or if I don't have a plan, what do I do? Running a restaurant is very, very difficult. You guys all know that. Running multiple restaurants is even more difficult. And it's nearly impossible if we don't go into our jobs with a game plan. We don't have a good idea of how we start, what we focus on, and how we progress through our development. We're going to struggle with that. So today we are talking about the five-star playbook. Some of you obviously know what that is, and maybe have even had some training in the past with that. The five-star playbook was developed by Papa Murphy's several years ago, and it's a very effective tool to help owners and managers and operators to really have a game plan and know how to move through the progression of development. Many of us get ourselves into holes because we get lost. We get distracted by maybe the immediate needs, or distracted by fancy techniques and advanced ideas, when sometimes we just need to get back to the basics and really become more fundamental. And so today, Mickey Waters is on the call, and she's going to kind of help us. Mickey has done some training with the five-star playbook in the past. She's kind of an expert at this. So I'm gonna let Mickey tell you a little bit about the five-star playbook and give you kind of an overview of what's going to happen the next 4 or 5 weeks, and then we'll get started. Hi, Mickey.
Good morning. Good morning, Joel. Thank you for asking me to participate. I really appreciate that. The five-star playbook was rolled out about 4.5 years ago, like you said, with Papa Murphy's, and the whole program was put together originally to move the needle on the five-star metrics that all of the stores were working for. Eventually, what happened is, as different people left the company, the five-star program, you know, took a backseat to some other things. And so for myself, in my teams, what I started doing is using the five-star playbook, and we really kind of renamed it within our own group to be an all-star, you know, our all-star stores, working through the levels to try to help our managers and our supervisors get more proficient. And like you said, getting back to the fundamentals and making sure that we're hitting all of the points rather than jumping around. So originally, when the books were put out, they were delivered to each store or each franchisee by a market coach and a market leader. So if you've had a store that's been in operation for at least 4.5 years, you've probably got one of these books sitting on a shelf. It's a big spiral binder, paperback binder, and it says five-star playbook on the outside. And if you were in one of my groups, you had been actually invited to participate in monthly calls. And we did those a couple of different rounds to make sure that we could bring in new people, or, you know, people that may have dropped off on the first calls, just to bring them back up to speed. In our own organization, we're using it again. Because our minimum wage has gone up so much in Oregon, we have taken our shift supervisor level and we're elevating those people. They're going to be, we are really filling the bench with our shift supervisors, and we're using these phone calls. We all have, most of us have iPhones or something where we can do conference calling on those. So we do a little conference call once a month to work on the playbooks and the different levels.
Oh, that's excellent. So give us an idea. What is the playbook? I see that I've got the book right in front of me here, and as I look through here, I see there's 4 different categories. And if I'm not mistaken here, each category has 5 levels to it. Is that Is that right?
It does. It focuses on the people, your staff, your customers, sales, and then profits. And each one of the levels, once you achieve one level or you're working towards the achievement of that level, once you get there, you move on to the next. And so it can be divided up depending on what staff member you're working with. If you're just working with a shift supervisor, they may be just working on the cleanliness in level one. Or if you're working with a newer assistant manager, they may be working on forecasting of goals, even goals like AOS and building online sales. And then moving to those next levels, you know, moving up level two, level three, level four.
Okay. So today we're really looking at level one.
We are.
So level one, if we look at the people section, is we're going to talk about store staffing and hiring. And then for customers, we'll talk about cleanliness.
Okay.
For sales, forecasting goals. And then for profit, cash handling. So that really is kind of the basic level of our operations, isn't it?
It is, 100%. And you're going to see that in 4.5 years, if you look at this book, in 4.5 years, some of the names of the items that you might use might be a little bit different. When you get to the cleanliness section, it's going to be, you know, instead of it being K chemical, you're going to be referring to your Ecolab sections. If you have a closing checklist, it may be a new closing checklist that you've developed. I'm a believer in using tools that you have and that work. I'm truly a believer in that. But if you start back in staffing, you know, it all becomes, it all goes back to the basics of deciding how many people you need, what's coming up for us. It's football season. Football is everything here in around my stores, and so I'm looking at my guidelines of what I'm going to need. I'm also looking at how many kids are going back to school, and then I start in on using interview checklists. I teach people how to do instant interviews. And all of those kind of things are included in some of the forms that we have in the new named operations manual on the FreshNet. A lot of those forms are there. But this in this section, it takes you through evaluating your staffing needs, looking at what the recruiting tools are, how to prepare not only yourself but your team for doing interviews, and then how to conduct orientations. Because if you don't orientate them right, they're going to get there that first day and they're going to feel lost. We've all probably been there in some kind of job.
Oh, I think you're completely right on the orientation. Well, all of these, of course, are very important, but the orientation is just, that's the kickoff. If you don't get that right, everything else stumbles.
Yeah.
It's frustrating when you find down the road somebody's worked for 2 or 3 weeks or 2 months and you see they're doing something or they're operating in a way not the way that they should be trained, and the first thing they say is, well, I didn't know.
Yeah. We have a pretty firm policy in our team that either an owner or an area supervisor does all the orientations. Mm-hmm. We just make it work because we want them to know our philosophies on customer service and great pizza. And then we also want them to know all the benefits of working there. We have employee discounts. We give scholarships. You know, we want them to hear all the good stuff, too, that makes them want to stay.
Yep. So, Mickey, let's back up real quick to the very beginning of this staffing and hiring here. This is kind of an area that I'm kind of passionate about because I see that this makes the biggest difference in the world if you just staff well. And
yes.
And I see problems in this industry, in the service industry, in that a lot of people don't have the right mindset for staffing. They'll think that I'll start interviewing as soon as I lose people, and I have holes to fill. I'll just kind of get after it on just the people that kind of look good when they walk in the store, whatever the case is. But there's a difference in the managers or the owners that really staff their stores well. They're kind of set apart, and they do it well because they have some really good practices in place that starts with, some of these, you know, understanding staffing needs and then the recruiting itself. But they kind of have a pedal to the metal philosophy, wouldn't you say?
I believe you should, and I believe you should be always looking for the best candidates. All of us have been in a situation where we may have one little person that we are just right on the cusp, but we're fearful that if we lose them, now you're down one. If one leaves, another leaves. And so for us, everybody who comes in and brings in an application, we do an instant interview for. We just do, because we always want to be looking and being ready. You can't work in crisis. If you're working in crisis, you're not going to make as much progress as when you're fully staffed. So we're always keeping ahead. We tell kids and people that are hired, there's very few full-time positions within our company. That gives us also the flexibility to hire kids that might be doing a sport, or they might still want to do some babysitting, or a mom that wants to work just during the time that our kids are in school. So we have other people, we have enough people on the schedule to always be able to fill those other time slots. So we're always hiring. That's our philosophy.
Yep,
always
yep.
be hiring.
I agree with that. We have the same philosophy. We don't tell anybody we're not hiring.
Yeah.
We have in our company something with this too. We call it 2448. It's the 2448 rule. And basically that means that every application that comes in, we need to make sure that we are contacting them within 24 hours and setting up an interview, if possible, within 48 hours. So we're not just waiting till Monday afternoon to review our applications or whatever. Mm-hmm. So we're keeping up on it quickly. But I do like your idea of the instant interview too. And we have something like that in place where we just ask three questions. If it's a non-interviewing manager that's on mm-hmm. on duty, like a shift leader that doesn't usually do interviews, we'll have them ask, what's your availability, what's your experience, and how many hours a week you want to work.
Yeah.
Three simple questions.
I like that, and I like the idea of your 2448 rule. I've not heard of that before, but that's a great thing to go to. I know there are some stores that do have a standard Tuesday afternoon or Wednesday open interviews.
Mm-hmm.
So there's a lot of way to do it, but do it. Just
right.
When it comes down to it, do it. And put it on your calendar and make it a priority, and train a couple other people to do it too, because it doesn't take that much to ask those few simple questions.
Right.
And you don't want to let a good one get away. Not right now.
Yep, no doubt. Yeah, that's good advice. So level one here is we're kind of reviewing. We talk about recruiting, evaluating our staffing needs and hiring, and then preparing and conducting interviews. Do you have any tips on interviewing, Nikki?
Well, for me, I use the interview questions, and I teach my staff to use the interview questions right out of the operations manual and out of the store manager training books. I'm a believer in having consistent questions. That way the conversation doesn't get off track. You don't lose sight of the important information that you need to get from that staff member. It's very easy to start talking about, oh, they've been out picking strawberries, and then they're going to do beans, and then, then they're saving money for school clothes, and then you don't get to the fact that they're not going to be available on Friday night and Saturday because they're working, they are on, in the band or something like that. So for me, having those very specific questions and even laminating those list of questions, whatever your list of questions are going to be, so that you're always asking the same thing and getting the right information for your staffing needs.
Yep, I agree with that. And we talked a little bit about the orientation process. Fortunately, we have a lot of good resources already available with PMI to simplify that a little bit.
Yeah.
But the key is have a system in place and use it and make it consistent. And I like your idea, too, of having an area supervisor of an owner. We have general managers that do that, but
sure.
But But I think we need to increase our training. We've been working really hard trying to increase our training with the orientation, and it's helped. But so, okay. So that's the people section. Mickey, give us an idea of what Papa Murphy's is talking about here with the five-star playbook as far as the importance of our cleanliness.
Well, having a system in place. You know, we went through a large rollout with Ecolab, so we definitely have all the chemicals that we need. We have all the training materials that we need for those chemicals. We should have all of the tools that we need for taking care of all the cleanliness. But what it comes down to is doing it, keeping it fresh all the time, and having a system in place. And for us, we have checklists. We've got what we call our early out checklists. We've developed those off of using checklists that were already in place for the from the operations manual. Now, I really encourage my staff to not recreate something that's already there. So if there's a great checklist, we can add to it, but I don't want any manager sitting down, spending their time behind a computer, making a new checklist. We also take, we take our previous store visits that our market coach may do and our full day reviews and use those if we need to do some follow-up and get some consistency. So we're all about using what's already there and breaking it down so everybody's got almost like, you know, a bite of the pie every single day.
Yeah, that's good advice.
Yeah. And it breaks it out here in the book. It breaks it out weekly and monthly and, you know, what you're getting ready for your full day reviews and all of those things.
Well, you mentioned not reinventing the wheel. I think that is important, especially if you're a multi-store owner, you know, or as many stores as you have. Mm-hmm. It's important to have your stores run consistently and run alike, you know, particularly if you have people that will work in different stores.
Yeah.
The systems need to be the same. That is important. So.
Yeah. Well, and again, we believe in using a system that works well. So we use what has been, you know, presented to us from Papa Murphy's, but also we've taken a few things from some leaders in Papa Murphy's. I give credit to the Hodge Group regularly because I use their area supervisor checklist that our supervisors do every single month. We have an assistant manager who does that. It's a cleanliness check. And then the area supervisor follows up on that every single month. And it's a great tool. I'm sure Aaron Dake or any of their team could share it with Shelby. It's a really good tool. We use it, and it's, I believe, 100% it's helped us maintain our AAA rating in all 8 stores.
Excellent. Yeah. So I noticed that this playbook puts an emphasis on closing and opening as well. We find that it's cyclical. Is that the word? Yeah. That when a store starts to struggle with cleanliness during the day, it'll start to struggle with cleanliness in the evening because it's the whole leftover factor. You know, it's basically you walk in the morning to a dirty store, you're less likely to make sure that they're covered. And so I think that, you know, the need for daily checklists as well, just even shift checklists can be helpful.
Absolutely.
Mm-hmm. Yep. And it goes on to talk about a pest-free environment, and typically that's not something that we all do ourselves, hopefully. We hire somebody to come in.
Yeah.
But I suppose I could be corrected on that. I don't know.
It pays for itself. You know, we've all been in a store that has summer gnats. You know, you've seen it. And, you know, in the position I used to be in, I would see that in different stores. And we pay for our company that does our pest control has a drain, whatever, enzyme or something that's, you know, allowed here in our state. And I'm not finding some wood to knock on, but for 2 years now, we have not had those pesky gnats. So we stay on top of it, and that goes for any critter. So I'm a big believer.
Right. Well, one of the frustrations from owners that I've heard over time is that when it comes to cleanliness, maybe they're reflecting on our KDS scores or whatever it is, that our customers will frequently tell us when there's problems with uniforms. If our employees don't look good, if they, mm-hmm. Don't have a hat on or, you know, whatever the case is.
Yeah.
And that's really, really important. What our customer sees about our cleanliness is far more important than what our back room looks like. Wouldn't you say?
Yeah. I'm with you there. I'm a believer. We spend a lot of money with Airmark. We don't keep stained aprons around. We actually we're blessed to have washing machine and dryers in all of our stores. So we will pre-treat some of those aprons when they get spotted with degreaser. We wash them regularly. We throw away towels once they get brown or start to get that dingy look. We throw them away and we replace hats. I don't let employees share hats. That's just a thing. We just don't feel good about that. You can't wash them really well. So everybody gets a new hat. We regularly change out the shirts. We have plenty of shirts for everyone. And we want them to feel good about what they're wearing, especially in hot weather. Man, you know, the bacteria starts to grow and the uniform smells. And, yeah.
That's good. So we talked about store staffing and hiring. We talked about cleanliness. Let's move on to forecasting goals. Now, forecasting, obviously, people, you know, you all will know about the forecasting module in the POS system in the back of the house.
Yeah.
But forecasting goes much bigger than that.
Oh, and I've got stories to tell you about that.
Mm-hmm.
Well, let me tell you what we just embarked upon, and this is a month-long project. Forecasting at our lowest level, or our introductory level, I guess, we're having two team meetings in each one of our stores, and we have several goals set. Our goal is to increase our online ordering by 50%. Our goal is to increase our family size units by just setting a goal, depending on the store. Our goal was also to increase all of our AOS to over 40%. So those three things put in place, we used right out of the operations manual, the daily goals sheet, and we took our averages for, we set them for where we were as of June 18th of this year and gave every store their goals. We've had store meetings. We did a new phone script offering family size and offering AOS to every customer. And we have in every single store, as soon as that meeting was done, we've exceeded the goal set immediately.
Nice.
So something as simple as that. And in my stores, I really wanted to increase those online orders, because during football season, I want that cushion. I want less people on the phone. I want more people making pizza. So in some of my stores, that meant increasing their online orders by 4 orders a day. Who couldn't manage that?
Sure.
And in some cases, when we were looking at AOS, I had a couple of stores that were at 38% AOS. Several days within the first week, they were at 60% AOS. It was working. We had the script, and it was expected. So again, forecasting goals, it doesn't have to be, like you said, about setting dough numbers. It's about setting any kind of goal, even if it's just one goal, increasing your online orders.
Right.
It can be huge for you.
Yeah, forecasting is just looking ahead and projecting what's going to happen in the future.
Yeah.
And the
how
important
you
thing,
make it there.
Exactly. And the important thing is to know that we have a say-so on what's going to happen in the future. We don't have to just sit back and let it happen.
Oh, spot
yeah.
on. Spot
yeah.
on.
That's right. And
yeah.
so with forecasting, you know, we do we do look at the forecasting in our POS system, of course. We need to project what's coming forward for basically making our schedule, and it also helps us with our food inventory and projecting for that as well. Do you have any tips or tricks on the forecasting module in the POS system?
Well, my area supervisors really are charged with using it, and they go in there regularly and make adjustments as we see that weather changes, because the module takes previous information. It doesn't know what's coming up. You still have to move the numbers in that module. And so they go in and they make adjustments for changes in the specials. If the special is going to change to delights, they're going to change the numbers in there. If we have an event coming up, Halloween or, you know, any of those kind of our big event days, but also our football game days, and they will definitely go back last year, year before, check to see what day those football games landed on last year. Was it a BCS championship? Was there a parade going by us on these days? So all of those things still have to be tweaked in there. Mm-hmm. It doesn't just happen.
Right.
Just like doing it by the seat of your pants. You can do it by the seat of your pants, but you can also use just a little bit of, you know, previous history, but you still have to go in and make changes.
Yeah, that's right. If you just went in and created a new forecast, you just clicked that button and created a new one, and it auto-filled and created one based on mm-hmm. your past. And if you just did that week after week, you're not really going to have a very good forecast.
Right.
You really do have to do, as you were saying, figure out what's coming forward, whether it be weather, whether it be dates and so on and so forth. And also, the other part of this, too, is you have to look backwards and you have to see what other numbers may have skewed your future forecast. If you're coming out of Halloween or you're coming out of Valentine's Day, you've got to go in and make sure that's not counting towards your averages there. So you got to uncheck that. I also recommend that when we're going into a busy season or coming out of a busy season, that we're smart about that too. I like to use the philosophy of when you're coming out of a busy season, maybe go in and uncheck all of your top numbers, your top days. Yep. Mm-hmm. And if you're going into it, maybe the end of the summer, you go in and you uncheck all of your lowest day. And so that it just kind of bumps it up a little bit. And then you can play with the percentages a little bit. But it's important that we give it some thought, and that we give it some thought in each store, and that when we click save or whatever it is, we're comfortable with it, and that we communicate that information. Wouldn't you say?
Yes. I absolutely agree. You've got to have your hands on it. And we pay a lot for these systems, and I have known that we underutilize the tools in there quite often.
Yep.
So get in there and touch it. You're not going to break it.
Right.
It's just not.
And, you know, that forecasting does have a lot to do with our inventory as well. It's gonna give you an idea of how much product to order. It's going to affect the entire POS system. So that really is important to get that right. With that.
Especially if you're going from a cowboy to a CBA.
Oh, right. Sure. Sure. Okay. Well, hey, let's for the sake of time here, let's move on to the fourth module. And the fourth module is profits. And so for level one, we kind of start from the basics, which makes sense, and that is just cash handling or cash security. So give us an idea on your thoughts.
Here for us, and it's been a long-standing, it's always been the case within our organization that every drawer is counted when a cashier starts it. It's so basic. But every drawer for us is counted. Every drawer goes back down to $100. And if there isn't $100 in there, there's a problem. And we leave a little ticket inside the drawer that says, you know, who was the last person to count it, and all the money gets put in the envelope and goes into the safe. Boom. We take cash overages and shortages very, very serious, and every single morning, one of the owners is looking at the WSRs, looking at the cash over and shortages once the deposit is done, and any variances we call on. You know, the area supervisors are doing some other things first thing in the morning, but we're looking at those numbers, and our stores have really low cash over and shortages, as every store should. So we're double checking those all the time. We do our books every day.
Yep, I agree. I think the number one thing you can do for cash handling to really keep that under control is just, it's not some elaborate strategy. It's just make it a big deal daily.
Yeah.
That's really it. Communicate mm-hmm. to people so that people understand how their cash was the day before.
Yeah.
Making sure that the details are...
And we also make a big deal out of refunds. We are looking at those refunds every single day. Mm-hmm. And we have a sheet that we have we just have a piece of paper that who did the refund, who verified the refund, and the refunds have to be stapled to that. And it is amazing how I had worked with stores previously that didn't track that, and they would have hundreds of dollars of refunds each week. And nobody knew what was being refunded. And once they started tracking them, it went down to practically nothing.
Right.
So there yep. should be not, you know, very, very few reasons. I mean, there are reasons for refunds, but very few. And if there is a refund, you should be able to track it. Somebody should be able to verify it and sign off on it. And you should be able to hold on to that receipt and have it with your paperwork.
Yep, and when we do have poor cash control, it's typically because of poor training,
sure.
or just lack of accountability, or with just sloppiness, and that comes from lack of accountability,
yeah.
of course, or theft.
Or theft, yeah,
yeah.
It's real. It's happening out there, and
yeah.
somebody will find a way to get around it. But if they know you're watching and they know you're looking. And you're making a big deal of it, like you say. Mm-hmm. They're not going to be doing it as often.
Right. I find that also, if we strategically have our managers looking at camera at different times when people mm-hmm. can see them doing it, maybe yeah. they can glance in the office and see the managers looking at cameras, and they mm-hmm. see that the manager is regularly looking at cameras. That's a big deterrent too. It doesn't yeah. stop it, but it's a big deterrent.
Sure. No, and that's, I would tell you that also goes back to the conversation about when we do orientation, we let everybody know you're on video. Smile
yep,
big.
Yep. And if you are an owner, if you're on the call and you're listening and you've got a store or multiple stores that do not have cameras, I can't emphasize enough how you have to go get cameras. It will save you so much money. It's worth the money to spend $500 to go get a camera system or even better if you want one.
Costco. We bought our last several, I think, from Costco and got the eight camera set and fairly easy to string and put up, and we've got them on our phones. And we don't use it to spy on the stores. We use it for training. We use it in case, I will tell you, I was actually on vacation and we had one of our security alarms go off, and I was able to go right on my phone, look to see if there was somebody actually in the store, and it turns out we had a bag of trash that had fallen over and set off the motion alarm at about 2:00 in the morning. But it's not just for the, it's not just for the cash handling, but for the security and your peace of mind. So you don't have to, necessarily always go down to a store in the middle of the night. But in case you do need the police there, you can tell them what's going on in the store.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, it's having cameras and having an alarm system on your doors. That's a big deterrent for people.
And
if you don't have that, you may be a target for employment for people that might want to take advantage of that.
Right. And one of the things that I found over doing, I've been in doing this business for 40 years now, not Papa Murphy's, but in food. And you made a point about letting the employees know that you're looking. People who know that they aren't, that they're going to be watched, won't stay with you as long.
That's right. Yep. And it's amazing too. sometimes if you make a big deal about a problem with cash and you let people know, hey, we're going to be looking into this, we're going to find out where it's at, suddenly somebody will quit.
Yeah,
that happens quite often.
So, it does. Yeah.
All right. Well, so that pretty much concludes our level one for the five-star playbook. So we talked about staffing, cleanliness, forecasting, and cash handling. So next week, we can look forward to level two.
Next month?
Yep, next month. I'm sorry, not next week. And Mickey, do you want to give us just a quick preview on our agenda next week?
Yeah, so next month we're going to talk about doing training, and we're going to be in a really blessed position because by the time we meet next month, we will have been to convention, or if you're not able to attend convention, you'll see the information that comes out about some of the new training modules that they're putting together and some of the tools that Mindy and her team have put together. So we'll have that information. We're going to talk about quality. How do we make sure that quality is there? Are we training quality? What does quality look like? We'll talk about shift management. I just got word the other day that some of the folks out in the field can start doing manager training days again, do some of those classes, and then we'll talk about food costs because it is all about what our food costs us and our labor, for that matter.
Right. Excellent. Well, thank you, Mickey. Excellent job. So
thank you, Joel.
Next
Do we
month
have any
we'll...
questions from anybody by any chance, Joel?
Yep, that's what I was going to just bring up. Go ahead.
I have a question. I was just wondering what your phone script was after you implemented your team meetings on increasing your online ordering and family sizes and AOS. What does your phone script look like?
Well, I'm going to tell you, it is definitely out of the ordinary from Papa Murphy's. So it starts out with this, and because our big focus, like I said, was the online ordering. So thank you for calling Papa Murphy's in Lebanon. This is Mickey. Are you calling to place an order? And if they say yes, we say then, we're using right now in the store the orange bounce backs that we got in the POP kit that say 25 thanks. So when we say, are you calling to place an order, and they say yes, we say to them, before I take your order, if you'd like the opportunity to use our online ordering at papamurphys.com, I can give you our promo code, and you can get 25% off of your $20 order. Mm-hmm. And I'm going to tell you, I worked in store on Friday afternoon, and I sent 12 guests to our online ordering just by saying that. And if they say, no, I don't want to, we then go, would you like to hear our specials? And from the specials, would you? And when they say, I'd like a cowboy, is that family size? If they say no, we go to large. Would you like to do a cheesy bread and a 2-liter at our special price? Now, for us, we're really promoting the heck out of AOS right now, and we're adopting that make it a meal that our DMA is going to be using. So we're giving them that pricing option and then moving on to repeating the order. The other thing that I'm focusing on is using the guest's name as often as possible. So when we get to the time where we're punching in their phone number into the system, we're saying, is this John or is this Kathy? Kathy, what time are you coming in this evening? Kathy, we've got your cowboy, your cheesy bread, and your cookie dough. Thank you so much for calling ahead. So for us, I'm trying to push people to online, but those guests that stay on the phone with us, we're trying to make them friends, fans, lifetime customers. And I've told my kids, there's no timer on you when you're on the phone. I want them to hear your smile. I want you to take time with them. And if you feel like saying, honey, what time are you coming in tonight? I'm okay with that.
Great. Thank you.
I'd be happy to share my script with Shelby, and Shelby can make that available on the PMFI site.
Thank you so much.
You're welcome. Thanks for asking.
Okay, if there's any other questions, please mention your name and where you're from, and Mickey will solve all your problems for you.
Not. Not hearing any questions.
So I have a question then for everyone else. I would like to know who has gone through who has gone through some of this training with a five-star playbook in the past, and what your thoughts on it would be.
Maybe a better question would be, does anybody know if they have the book still in their stores?
I'm going to definitely look when I get home, when I get into the store.
Great.
Yeah, Mickey brought this up to me a few months ago, and I had just looked on my shelf. I didn't know what it was, and I actually did a Google search to try to find out what it was, because she just kind of mentioned it in passing. And then I went and I looked in my on the shelf in one of my stores, and I found two of them just sitting there. I thought, wow, I haven't noticed that. So I'll bet some of you have that, have them available as well. It is excellent, though. I've been looking through it, and you know, so much of it is basic, and each module doesn't have any serious wow effect. But when you look at it as a whole, so you can see progressively how we should move forward, that makes a big difference. For instance, in the people category, you know, the stages would be staffing and hiring, and then we move to team member training, and then we move to payroll, safety, and HR, and then level four is store communication, and then level five would be performance management. So you can see how it progresses all the way up, and I think that's important that we don't start at the top. We don't try to worry about performance management if we don't even have a full staff that's trained right.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, but we've probably both seen that before, haven't we?
Yeah.
Yeah, I've been there and done that. You know, I think it's a growing process for all of us, though, isn't it? Though we have to kind of work through it.
It is, and if you stick with the basics, you're less apt to find yourself in crisis. You don't. I mean, nobody. We all say we like to rise to the occasion when we're in crisis, but when it comes down to, you know, an event day and you aren't prepared and you're in crisis, you're not going to perform well. You're just not, because you're going to run out of food, you're going to run out of people, you're going to run out of, you know, everything, and you're not going to serve great pizza with great service. And so keeping yourself out of crisis and working from the basics, I think, is fundamental.
Yep, I agree. Any last-minute questions or discussion topics anybody wants to bring up?
Can you hear me?
Yes, Lori, there you are.
Hi.
Hi.
I just feel like I have to say I'm literally having a panic attack hearing you guys talk about this stuff, because I feel so, you know, like always trying to just get the basics. You know, we don't have that solid management team and crew that we've had in the past. And yeah. You know, just, you know, getting interviews and getting people hired and orientation. And, I mean, on Friday I called the stores at 20 to 10 and nobody answered the phone. And I called and called and thought, what the heck is going on? And finally somebody answered and they said, oh, we were told that we don't have to answer the phone when it's getting close to closing time. I mean...
I've heard that before.
You know, like that's where I'm at, and I'm just making a comment because I'm you know, frantically writing notes about, you know, the things you're saying. And I used to be where I could, you know, get very specific with them about goals, and I'm just still not there, and it's so frustrating.
Well, and when you know, Lori, when you, in anything we do, when we get behind, it's just a battle to get back up that hill. It is. And you can't take as many shortcuts as we'd like to take. It is a challenge because if you take those shortcuts, you're going to miss that one person that needs that information, and then they start passing on that information to the next person, and it's, you know, it's inbreeding of that information.
Yeah.
That's right. You know, Lori, one thing that I think of, I think most of us have been where you're at or are where you're at. I don't think that just goes away totally, but
no.
But one thing about all of these topics that we can look at in the five-store playbook, if we had to just pinpoint one main thought that maybe we should focus on, and that is people. And because everything hinges on people. We can't have a clean store if we don't have good people. We can't, you know, the forecasting isn't going to matter if we don't have good people. The food costs and the labor costs, all of that is not going to come in line if we don't have good people. And I think one simple exercise that any restaurant owner or manager or leader can do is to sit down with a piece of paper and figure out what obstacles could possibly be in the way of not having good people. For instance, you could ask yourself, what resources am I using to recruit? And if the obstacle is you're too cheap to use Indeed, then that's an obstacle you got to consider whether you should remove it. If an obstacle is you don't have a good system on interviewing, then you got to reevaluate that and think, okay, where's a good resource I can use for interviewing? If it's a philosophy within your company of just kicking back on your heels and recruiting only when you need to, and not staying ahead of it, then you got to figure out, okay, how can I get rid of that obstacle and get everybody on board and turn the culture around? So I think a lot of it is just really doing some self-evaluation and figuring out what is getting in the way that's causing me to stumble over and over and over again that maybe I'm not even aware of. And you could even consider asking for help an outside source that could look at you and help you see what might be you know, the obstacles in our ways.
Yeah.
All right. Well, excellent question, Lori. Does anybody else have any thoughts or questions for Mickey?
Or Joel?
Yes.
I have one more question. So we have three stores. We've owned them for almost 20 years. We've had long, long time employees that over the last year have left, and we have new managers in place now, and we don't have an area supervisor and haven't for about 18, 19 months. Can you hire an area supervisor that does not come up from the inside? Is that possible? Has anybody ever done that?
I have not. Everybody I've ever promoted I've been doing it for 40 years, but 30 of it really in the more senior management, Lori, and I've never brought anybody from the outside that succeeded. I think once or twice attempted to. They, you know, they came from another concept, but it was very hard. There was always this, well, we did it this way and we did it that way, or they wanted to recreate or create something new. When we, you know, we've always just had a system in place, and if you followed that and they could follow up on it. But I have not, I myself have not been able to do it from the outside.
I've never done that either. So in 13 years, I've never done it from the outside with an area supervisor. We have brought in people from the outside for at general manager positions, and I think there's a couple things in play here. First of all, an area supervisor needs to have credibility. They need to have already proven that they can run a store effectively and efficiently. And that's just hard to do when you bring in somebody from the outside. You don't have any idea if they can do it or not. And your managers will know that, too. They'll know that. And then the second part that makes this particularly difficult is if you bring an area supervisor into that situation, you're going to make it very, very hard for them. They're going to have the wind against them, you know, in their face, because they're coming in and the people that they're supposed to supervise are just much further along down the line with at least with Papa Murphy's than they are. Your area supervisor, even if they come with a lot of good experience, they don't know that much about Papa Murphy's. And so that's just a whole lot of stuff to pile on somebody. So I would recommend, like Mickey said, I would recommend maybe really putting some effort in towards, you know, a general manager as opposed to hiring an area supervisor from outside.
And when you're behind the eight ball, Lori, and all of your general managers are new, you know, it's hard to think that you're going to be able to do that. And again, it's going to be continuing to climb that mountain and buying new mountain climbing shoes constantly, because it's going to be a 2-year process or longer to get those people up to speed and hope that they will become the leaders that you need for that.
Right.
Now, my company just recently lost an area supervisor. We have two area supervisors, and we just lost one, and we chose not to replace him right away, basically for this reason. So we put more of a focus of us last month with putting those resources towards managers, our general managers, increasing the quality of our general managers, in hopes that one will rise to the top, as opposed to hiring from outside for that position. So we let it happen more naturally. So.
Yeah. Thank you.
All right. Well, those are excellent questions. We've got time for six more questions. I'm just kidding. We've got time for a couple more questions if anybody wants to chime in. Otherwise, if you'd like, you can certainly log off and be finished. But Mickey and I will stay on the call for a few more minutes.
Keith Horton, are you there? I can see your number. I was hoping you'd come on and tell us what's going on in your store. What are some of your successes? He must be on mute. Or maybe his store manager is on.
Or he's shy.
Keith is not shy. Maybe it's Peggy who's on. Oh, well. Okay.
Yep. Well, hey, Mickey, thank you very much for your time today.
You.
We look forward next month to hearing about Level 2. And
I look forward to seeing everybody at convention, too.
Yep, that'll be good. All right, thank you, everybody. We'll go ahead and end the call now, and have a great week.
Bye-bye.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Bye, Mickey. It's actually my wife.
What?
I walked in on her and your little, you know, thing going on here.
Oh, okay. All right. Peggy, we'll
I heard my name.
Convention.
What's that?
I said I'd tell Peggy we'll catch up at convention then.
We're not going to be there, Mickey. It's the 1 week of the year we can't go to a convention.
Okay. Well,
tell
we'll catch
up
at the DMA meeting then.
All right. Yeah, Tillamook County Fair that week. So.
Awesome. All right, sir. Take care.
Bye.
Bye-bye. Bye-bye, Joel.
Yep. See you later, Mickey. Thank you.